the Buddha, Sri Dharma, the Sangha. So I want to take a moment and remind us where we are now in our in the narrative of Rimessa's retreat, her great Kensho in 1976. If you looked at it in terms of the Four Noble Truths, which is the simplest kind of framework within which to look at what is happening here, we have gone through the First Noble Truth, suffering exists. We have now gone through the Second Noble Truth, the cause of suffering. And in the process of working through those two noble truths, all these gems of teaching have been exposed and used. You see that the great Sangha that's happened. That's if you're looking at the Shishogi, well, the first chapter of the Shishogi is about impermanence. And you could say about impermanence and suffering, really. And the second chapter of the Shishogi is what? It's Sangha. What's the third chapter of the Shishogi? The precepts. So Sangha came, the precepts came, the causes of suffering have now been the Sangha and the precepts have come in the context of working on the cause of suffering. It's not like you stop suffering when you're working on the cause of suffering. But you're not making suffering when you're working at the cause of suffering. You're cleaning it up. So remember that when we talk about cleaning up the karma, you know, that's always in the context of the precepts, because otherwise you're just making more while you're trying to clean it up, and that won't work. You've got to stop making it, stop causing the suffering, in order to clean up what's been caused. And that's, you know, what's happening here. So now today we're talking about really this, what I described yesterday and I will always think of, is this miracle of conversion that happened, in which you move from directly from the cause of suffering to the cessation of suffering. And the whole rest of Lotus Blossom is about the cessation of suffering and the Eightfold Path. But we're right at what is really the crucial turning point today. Again, I just say, you know, some people say that they have difficulty with how to grow lotus blossom. And all I can say is they have difficulties with it because they actually don't understand that it's just Buddhism at the deepest level. And that Buddhism at the deepest level can be recognized by anyone with a really open mind and heart who knows anything about Buddhism at the seemingly shallowest level. Because what are the first things you learn about? The Four Noble Truths, the refuges, the precepts. What are we dealing with here? The Four Noble Truths, the refuges, the precepts. I just think there's something about the fact that someone actually does it, and, you know, it's actually scarier than if you're just talking about someone who did it 2,500 years ago and you don't have to worry about them anymore. She says, "For 24 hours I have been living in this oneness of love with my tiger." And this happens, that there's this lingering, after the really big key past lives come up, there is this lingering time of reflection and compassion, as if the you're the being the vehicle again. Your body and mind again is being the vehicle for this compassion of the eternal to seep into every nook and cranny. She says, however, when asking the eternal Lord what I should do next, I discover that Mara is using my love just as he uses everything else. I have known so little love, it has been so exquisite, but there is danger in loving too much. So in great grief, I pluck the tiger from my breast, ordain it, and celebrate Sagaki. It does not need the latter, but it is good to do the ceremony. In this case, it really didn't need the Sagaki. The Sagaki is, basically a ceremonial done to give peace to the most, to help give peace and point the way to the eternal for the most kind of distressed and confused karma. That's why you always do Sagaki for a suicide in Buddhism, for example. But in this case, you know, that distress has already been dealt with. So it's just an extra measure that is taken, but it didn't really need to be taken. And it's good to do so. I mean, it can't do harm to do the ceremony. It is always a risk that one runs. And this is one of the scary things about this process. No matter how far you go, no matter how pure the love is, no matter how pure the motivation is, you always have to be mindful that the next moment you can sin again, basically. Ramesh used to say, right after confession that people often do their next big sin. I got free from that. Whew. They feel nice and clean and everything, and then go off and do something dumb. Well, this is not exactly that, but it is just saying, it's just a caution, and especially for people in these really deep retreats, that you have to keep your grounding, always keep your grounding in the meditation. Always keep your focus on the precepts. Preceptual action, the stillness, the turning towards the eternal in meditation. That is the foundation of everything else. And one has to really be careful when, from elation, out of feelings of compassion and sympathy, empathy, tenderness, whatever it is, one starts to lose one's grounding and float. One has to then reground. And one has to do it in the way that's appropriate. If one has really lost one's grounding, and I'll have to say that has happened to me a few times, then it can take a good smack to get one regrounded. And I've been very fortunate when I've done that, that there have been people who've been willing to give me that smack and help me get regrounded. And this happens to everyone, by the way. I'm not especially virtuous or especially vicious in this regard. I'm just normal. But thank God for those people who know that love is more than just holding your hand and telling you it's going to be all right. Thank God for the people who are willing to express love more vigorously and forcefully when it's needed. And at this point where Master's talking about is that kind of smack is not what's needed. It's just a gentle letting go and relinquishing. And it's so utterly important that it be gentle. And you're going to see why in the very next thing we go into here. So even if delusion is threatening here to get in there and have some fun with it, it's really clear from the context of what's happening from the way where Master's talking about it, that if anything, she's probably a little too alert here. And again, you can't hold on to anything, even to love. Because if we try to hold on to love, what is it? We're trying to hold on to a particular feeling. And remember that the feeling of love is not what love really is. It's the signal of love, what love really is. The feeling of love is one of the signals. Feelings are signals. But that's not what love really is. Love is not something just of our volition either. You know, love is something that is of the eternal and that is incomprehensible to us. So we must not grasp after the signals, thinking that they're the reality. The next plate is I have to watch it. I don't just kind of burst into tears talking about this, because to me this is the most amazing thing and deeply moving. The appearance in the Hall of Shadows. She says, I have known love for so short a time. Something has to be done. I must accept the tiger back into me and not discard it. See, here's the thing. This is why this business is so magnificent and so risky. You're dealing eventually with the deepest causes of suffering, which are very confused and very pained. And yet while dealing with them, they have to be handled just right. And none of us is smart enough or clever enough or educated enough or had enough experience and training to handle it just right on our own. None of us. Not Reverend Master, not the Buddha, not anyone. Not now, not ever. So what are you thrown back on? There's no other human being who's smart enough either, by the way. Clever enough, experienced enough. The only thing to fall back on at this level, you've got to fall back directly upon the eternal. It's a prompting from the eternal, let it go now. It's a prompting from the eternal, let it back in now. Do you see what I'm saying? Many twists and turns, you have to follow the course through the twistings and turnings. Hold fast to the Lord of the house in the process. She says, how can this be done? I know the way. Well, believe me, she knows the way because she is asked like crazy at this point. Please help me. And, you know, she's not saying it, but I know it's there, this cry for help of the heart. I know the way. I know in my heart the way. The heart knows the way. When the self is out of the way, when one is turned fully towards the eternal, the heart will show the way. This is the following, true following of the eternal. She says, I must open myself completely to the tiger whilst saying no to Mara. What have I been saying again and again recently? Say no to the delusion, yes to the eternal. No to the delusion, yes to that which is utterly good and of the eternal. I must open myself completely to the tiger while saying no to Mara. I also say that this is really scary when you do this. This is really scary. Because you put enormous work into cleaning it up here. Now I've got to let it back in. How do I know it won't just go on a rampage? How do I know I won't be swept away? Well, the answer here is that the conversion is well underway. All the training of Reverend Master's life, all the training of this retreat up to this point is coming to a focus here in this act. Well, you cannot willfully do this. If people, one of the reasons why the teachings that are embodied here are sometimes kept more secret is so that people will not make the mistake that is made by people doing magic and the like, who let the unconverted stuff in. Everything's got to be, the timing has to be right for this. This is conversion in process here. I open my left hand holding the manji within it. The manji, the symbol of the turning of the wheel of the law. The symbol of the circulation of the water of the Spirit, of the compassion and wisdom of the Eternal at work in the whole universe and in our lives. I open my left hand holding the manji within it. The left side of the body is like the receiving side from the Eternal. The right side is the passing on side. Some people have thought that it might be different if you're left or right-handed. I'm left-handed, and it's the same for me. I don't believe it is. I think it's the same for everyone. A receiving and a passing on side. This has to do with the flow of the water of the Spirit in the actual body. Remember that the flow of the water of the Spirit is not just bodily. It's experienced through the vehicle of the body, through the vehicle of feeling, through the vehicle of thought, through the vehicle of volition, through all of those. It's not just bodily. She says, "Come enter me, all that is good within this tiger, but anything that is not of the Eternal Lord must stay outside." And that's how to do it. All that is good, all that is ready for conversion here, for the final step of conversion may enter, that which is not yet ready must wait. But in this particular case, it's a complete thing. She says, "I feel energy enter my left arm. I know that the tiger has entered me." See, the tiger doesn't exist anymore, okay, as a tiger. So the energy entering the left arm is the water of the Spirit. She's open, the receptive. This is the experience of the water of the Spirit physically. There's also the experience that's in feeling, the experience that's in thought, the experience in volition. It's easiest to talk about the physical, but don't think it's just physical. Okay. So this what's experienced is like electricity or energy or flowing cold or warm water in the body. This is the experience of the water of the Spirit. It's a common enough experience for people who meditate. I've had a layperson who'd been meditating and knew nothing about the spiritual meaning of the water of the Spirit, give me a very good description of the physical experience of it, and yet the person has yet had no concept whatsoever. I mean, no concept of what its real meaning was. And then that indeed one will not until all conditions ripen. So simply experiencing the water of the Spirit physically is not the same as enlightenment, by the way. Any more than experiencing love and feeling is the same as the experience of enlightenment. And yet those are definitely aspects of the experience of enlightenment. What is true of the experience of enlightenment is that there is a big conversion. And one awakens to one's true nature. And it is this awakening that is happening here. And this is a fundamentally important part of it. I know that the tiger has entered me. The tiger meaning this, the swept in with the water of the Spirit is the klesa vasana of this past life. And that means basically the karmic impregnations of this past life. And she says, "It curls up within my hara, grows smaller and smaller. It is now a tiny dot." Now grok this. But what is this? The dot, as it vanishes, is becoming something else, a beautiful golden thing like a golden Buddha. Not quite triangular, more teardrop-shaped, old gold in color. It is an exquisite thing to have within me. It sits in shadow, as if in an unillumined hall, the walls of which I know to be white and purple. It changes into a golden Buddha. This is the beginning of the great miracle that none of us could ever make happen by ourselves. Anyone who thinks it can is totally delusional. This is conversion happening. This is the description's being given is the description at the level of the vision, but the reality of it, what's happening, the actual reality of what's happening, is underlies the way it's being experienced. And it has to be spoken of in some form or other as in terms of human experience. And so she's describing it in terms of the actual experience that she had at the time, the way she experienced it. But what is being experienced is infinitely greater and deeper than the way it's being experienced. Am I making sense? I don't know if I'm making sense or not. Put it another way. It's the tip of the iceberg, how we experience it. It's the way the iceberg shows itself above the water, but you don't know how much there might be under the water. You know, I say this in part because you can get hung up on the imagery here. And think, I have no experience of this. This imagery hasn't ever happened to me like this. Well, that doesn't matter whether imagery's ever happened to you like that. Master's visions are her visions, not yours. You may never have what's called visions, or you may. This isn't about the visions. This is about, the visions are about what's happening. What's happening cannot be described too easily without some kind of symbols like this. Again, I'm using the word symbols very loosely here because this is not just symbolic. I keep saying that. Because no one comprehends a miracle. How does greed, hate, and delusion convert to compassion, love, and wisdom? How does the Buddha nature of that which is so utterly despairing and confused and anguished, how does the Buddha nature of that manifest, reveal itself? Now this is beyond our understanding. All we can say is that it happens. And this is it happening here. The conversion of this huge chunk of the past karma that underlay most, at least, of what has happened in a whole stream of karma. You know, has been being trained with for lifetimes. And the load of its ignorance and of its confusion, of its pain, has been kind of been distilled down. Until it's distilled down into one little dot. And then out of this dot, it's like the Big Bang, out of this dot, a whole universe of enlightenment is bursting here. And the whole rest of how I grow lotus blossom is what bursts out of this dot in the Hara. Okay, so why in the Hara? You know, the Hara is the area from the sternum down to the pubic area and kind of follows this triangular area of the body that follows the ribs. So the Hara itself is like this. Well, when you meditate deeply, when you experience, you know, the deep stillness of meditation, when the meditation is kind of doing itself and you're just sitting there, you know, which I know it doesn't always happen, but most of us have experienced it. Some of us have experienced it a great deal. So, well, I used to say to the late trainees, you know, many years ago, I used to say, well, sometimes I meditate and sometimes the meditation does me. When it's the meditation doing you is when it's just a free-flowing samadhi. And you're like the quiet witness to this great stillness, within this great stillness. And Dhara is a place where this is experienced as centering in our body, this great stillness. It's a common experience for people in the deepest meditation to feel like Dhara is just expanding and expanding and expanding into this infinite ocean of stillness. As Master Mokugan's great ocean, you know, great ocean Dharma refuge. And those of you who've read her extracts from her diary, referring again and again to the great ocean, to the ocean being carried out into this great infinite stillness of the Buddha nature, and then deposited back on the shore at some point, back into daily life. Going in and going out, being carried inwards, being deposited back into daily life. So within this great stillness, the little Buddha that was that tiger all along has manifested. And this is the beginning of the cessation of suffering. This is the Buddha, this is the Dharma, this is the Sangha.